This is Phil Davidson, and with me today is Rockford Symphony Orchestra music director Yaniv Attar, and we are discussing the third Masterworks concert of the 2024-2025 RSO season. Mozart meets Mahler, happening on Saturday, January 18th at 7:30 p.m., of course, at the Coronado Performing Arts Center. Happy New Year, Yaniv.
Happy New Year, Phil. Good to see you.
Good to see you. Mozart meets Mahler. It almost sounds like some kind of competition, you know, a boxing match or something.
Right.
Why did you choose to pair up these two composers?
Yeah, so it's like a fairy tale, Mozart meets Mahler, because those composers never met each other. Mozart died way before Mahler was born. Those composers are so opposite worlds in a way. Mahler is, of course, the gigantic symphonies and choirs and soloists and you know, 90 minutes to a symphony, and Mozart is the classical so it seems like they have nothing in common. But for the fourth symphony of Mahler, which is so different from all the nine symphonies that he wrote, that it's the shortest, smallest in orchestration. You know, when you think of the third symphony written before the fourth, it's an hour and a half of a symphony. It has eight horns, huge choir. Here, none of it. It's the smallest. There's not even trombones or tuba. Only four horns, only. But more than just the size of the orchestra, the style of the music is so classical in nature, very melodic, simple, in a way a little bit even naive. They always say that the Fourth Symphony of Mahler is kind of a Mozartian in style. And for that reason, that Symphony of Mahler, number four, is often programmed with pieces of Mozart.
Oh, that's very interesting. The first half of the program is Sinfonia Concertante by Mozart. Mozart, of course, he had such a storied career, such a storied life. I mean, we could spend this whole session
right,
talking about Mozart, but I don't suppose Mahler would like that too much. He is, of course, considered one of the greatest composers in the history of Western music. Why such a designation?
First, I think it's the amount of works that Mozart wrote, especially for, I mean, he died at, you know, in his mid-30s. And when you think of Mahler, for example, Mahler, of course, lived longer, and he only wrote 9.5 symphonies, plus a few song cycles, but not a lot of compositions to be celebrated as one of the greatest composers. Mozart, on the other hand, wrote about 600 works, and that's including 27 piano concertos, piano sonatas, lots of chamber music, lots of operas, 41 symphonies that we know of. I mean, he was an amazing, court musician, composer, performer on violin, on piano. I mean, he was like if there's any definition of prodigy, Mozart is the one. I mean, even you look at his manuscripts, they are absolutely perfect pieces of art. I'm not talking about the music even. I'm talking about the way it looks. People say it's almost as if God, he was writing music holding God's pen, you know, that kind of a metaphor. But I think what makes him one of the greatest composers is the complexity and palette of emotions that a composer of a classical style was able to bring into music was unparalleled from what came before him, and in many cases, what came after him. And he was an inspiration to composers, you know, till this very day. And I think that's put him in as one of our most incredible figures in Western music.
Well, now during his short life, 35 years, I think he moved around a lot, and he actually had some financial problems, I believe. Did he not?
Yeah. I mean, he struggled partially because, I mean, it was never easy to make a living as a musician, and he was relying on commissions. You know, he performed, he did whatever he could to make money, and because of it, he moved a lot. A big part of it is also that he didn't know how to balance a budget. As you know, he loved living way above his means.
I think we can all relate to that.
But he was constantly in debt because of it, and you know, he would accept commissions from anybody basically to make money. That's why, you know, the famous movie Amadeus and that secret commission of the Mozart Requiem and etc. So yeah, he did not have an easy life as a composer.
All right, we're going to hear Sinfonia Concertante performed. For somebody, a novice like me, discuss concertante versus symphony or some other type of music.
Yeah, so Mozart was such a pioneer in terms of structure of music. You know, when you think of today concertos in the 20th century, they are really written these days like almost like symphonies that have a solo instrument. And I think Mozart was really the first one who thought about that idea. It's not like the concertos written before where the soloist is the main focus. It's just, you know, he or she playing the instrument and the orchestra is there to accompany them. Cha-cha, call it a day. No, he wanted to infuse those two forms of symphony and a concerto into one where the orchestra gets a much more involved part. It's not only that we have two soloists for this concerto, a violin and a viola, but also that we have a very involved part from the orchestra, so that they're having a dialogue between them all the time. So it's a much richer way to experience a concerto as to just have a soloist that the orchestra accompanying.
Well, so would you give us a picture of what we're going to hear in this piece? It's, you know, the nature, the character, what makes it special?
In a way, you hear the same things that you would hear in a regular concerto. You know, the orchestra introduces the themes first and then passing it on to the solo instrument. But, you know, there are not that many concertos in the classical period that involve two instruments. You know, Mozart wrote a few for two or even three pianos, but those were more things that you would hear more in the Baroque period. Less than the classical period, but here it's interesting because, you know, it's instruments that are similar a little bit to each other, but also they're different in range. And again, it's as if you have chamber music with the soloist and the orchestra. It's the traditional three movements. Nothing is going to be out of the ordinary. Just a much more involved orchestral part. I think the second movement especially is one of my favorite Mozart movements for a concerto. It's just incredible. And it's very rare. I mean, Mozart did not write any viola concertos. Not many classical composers wrote viola concertos. So this is one of the rare moments that we hear Mozart featuring viola in the orchestra. In the orchestra as well, interestingly, usually there's only one viola part. He gives two viola parts to the in the orchestra. So four violas will play part one, and four violas will play part two. And it gives a really rich orchestral texture. So it's almost sound like it's a bigger orchestra when it's not.
Well, now, so we're going to experience Mozart in the first part of the program, but then we go and we get to experience Mr. Mahler in the second part and Symphony Number 4, as you alluded to earlier. I read in that as a composer, Mahler acted as a bridge between the 19th century Austro-German tradition and early 20th century modernism. That's a mouthful, but that's what I read. So how so? Why?
You know, I'll keep it simple. They say that Mahler is really the last romantic symphonist, you know, coming from composers like Brahms, Schumann, etc., and then there's Mahler. After that, it's really modern music. And I think it's not just about the compositions themselves. Mahler just went, you know, to the edge of what you think about orchestration, for example, and the use of large orchestra. He uses techniques in orchestras that, you know, you've never had in the romantic, like in Brahms or in Schumann, lots of stopped horns, which is a special nasal sound that they make. Lots of percussive stuff from the strings in, you know, Ponticello's by the bridge or at the fingerboard, or just hitting the bow with the hair on the string to get percussive instruments. There's lots of it in the Mahler symphonies. So the idea of sound effects and the use of the orchestra is definitely one of those things. The other thing is the themes that he talks about. And in Mahler, there's a lot of, not mystical or I'm not, lots of philosophical ideas in a way, dealing with subject like the afterlife, but in a real complex way. I forgot who said it, but I love that about Mahler's music. It say that Mahler's music is almost a soundtrack to the subconscious.
Mm.
And it really is.
Very intriguing.
Yes. So, and that's, I think, something that composers maybe thought about before, but not to that extent.
I believe Mahler was foremost as a conductor and then a composer. Is that not true?
It actually was the other way around.
Really?
I mean, he was a composer first. He managed to make his living as a conductor. He was a conductor of the New York Philharmonic at one mm-hmm. point. And he really, I think, changed the conducting profession in an incredible way, raising the level of orchestras and of performance, etc. He composed, though, throughout his life. A funny story about him, you know, he composed this piece. It's called Das Klagende Lied. It's a huge orchestra and choir. I think he wrote it when he was 20. And he submitted it for like a competition thing, and he didn't win. You know, I mean, think about Mahler today. But, he, like I said before, he did not write a huge... His catalog is not big. But he did manage to change the course of music with only 10 symphonies and a few song cycles. He kept the composing, most of the composing process was during the summer, when he wasn't conducting. So he was still mainly known as a conductor than as a composer. And of course, today it's the other way around.
Well, I was reading that at least early critics maintained that his adoption of various styles to express emotions meant that he really didn't have a style of his own, but his... Really, there's a lot of originality there, is there
right.
not?
Well, you know, I think when it's a good bridge from your previous question, because when you whole life is a conductor and you perform other people's music, it's going to have influence on you whether you like it or not.
Of course.
So I'll give you a few examples with his music. Mahler, his last symphony, the Ninth Symphony, it's called the Farewell Symphony. The last movement of it, which is gigantic, is based on the last movement of Tchaikovsky's Sixth Symphony, which is also Tchaikovsky's last symphony, and his Farewell Symphony. You know, we think of killed himself after that symphony. And like the whole structure and some of the melodies are based on that Tchaikovsky, which is so ironic because Mahler often criticized Tchaikovsky for his quality of music. But on the other hand, not only he based his last movement on the Tchaikovsky symphony, if you look at the programs Mahler conducted throughout his life as a conductor, he did a lot of Tchaikovsky. So, you know, if you don't think it's a quality composer, why are you conducting him so much? Or when you think of, Mahler and Brahms, you know, the first symphony of Brahms has that famous theme at the last movement. And then the beginning of Mahler's Third Symphony, pam pa pa pam 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 pa 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 pa. I mean, it's clear where a lot of his inspiration comes from, and some of the quotes even Beethoven, Fourth Symphony in his, or Brahms Second in the First Symphony. So he did get a lot of inspiration and maybe sometimes themes from the great composers. But definitely he had a style of his own. When you hear Mahler, you know it's Mahler. Just like when you hear Bach, you know it's Bach, even if you don't know the piece. It's the same thing. Mahler has a sound signature that is unmistakable.
So his Fourth Symphony is described as the last of the Wunderhorn symphonies. So what are those symphonies, and what is it, What, any subject matter that...
So the Wunderhorn Symphony is a collection of poems, and they were very influential in Austro-German culture of the time. Mahler was not only familiar with them, he wrote a lot of music for those poems, and many of those themes later from the songs he composed appear in the symphonies, in the first four symphonies. So in a way, we were talking about before about the philosophical ideas and stuff. So immediately when we have songs that people know, songs at the time, and let's say they deal with the subject of death, and now this music that Mahler wrote in the song deals with that topic, and then he brings that music into the symphony, it already has a connotation that we associate that. So he already brings that into the music. And in the case of the Fourth Symphony, I think it's especially important because the last movement is actually one of the songs that he wrote, The Heavenly Life. And he used it as the fourth movement of that symphony.
So I did read that after the premiere of the Fourth Symphony, Mahler revised it quite a few times. Why did that happen?
Many times, you know, unlike Mozart, who, you know, you don't get revisions, really. Mahler as a conductor often revised not only the pieces that he wrote, but he actually revised compositions of other composers. You know, there are Beethoven symphonies that are totally reorchestrated by Mahler, Schumann symphonies that are totally, and he would change it every time. The revisions came from basically hearing the symphony, either conducting it or hearing somebody else conducting it, and just saying, you know, this doesn't work. He changed the orchestration, he changed the, maybe some took some sections out, this doesn't work. It's just, for him, it was always a work in progress. I mean, you have it with other, like Bruckner, which is, you know, around the same time. Every symphony has maybe three versions.
Well, you gave us a little bit of a description about this symphony earlier, but can you elaborate on that, what we might hear?
Yeah, so this symphony, what's so unique about it is, and when you think about Mahler symphonies, usually the last movement is the longest movement, is the climax of the piece. Here it's not. It's actually the shortest movement. It's only about 9 minutes long, that movement. And it's a song from the Das Knaben Wunderhorn, that song cycle. And Mahler wrote that song 9 years or so, or 8 years before he wrote the symphony. He actually considered having that song at the end of the third symphony, but it's already 90 minutes long. So thank goodness he didn't do that. And that became the last movement of the Fourth Symphony. So if you think of it, it's like the finale is written first. You can do it in a book, right? Write the end and then write the entire story around it. So the first three movements, a lot of the themes you will hear come from the last movement, which was written first. The song of the fourth movement is a song about a child that is walking through heaven, the heavenly life, walking through heaven, and basically gives his impressions of what he sees, the saints and the dancing and the sacrifice of the lambs to God and the fruits and the saints cooking. It's very pastoral, and it's amazing because it's the contradiction of being, I don't want to say happy music, but calm music and pastoral and all this. But when you think of it, if a child is in heaven, that's tragic. Mm-hmm. Child is not supposed to be in heaven. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a lot about what Mahler is about. And this piece, to me, is really all about life. The first movement is, from the very beginning of the symphony, you hear sleigh bells, which is very unusual for a symphony. And you think about youth, and the melodies are so simple and playful. And that's what really the first movement is about. Second movement is about death. And it's actually, at some point, he titled it Dances of Death. And what's interesting about that second symphony is that you will hear and see the concertmaster, Michel, playing on two different violins in that symphony. One of the violins, which she solos with a lot in this movement, is tuned a whole tone higher than the rest of the violin section. And that's to give a harsh, street-like almost, as if the devil, the angel of death, whatever you want to call it, playing the violin. It's a wonderful effect, and she goes back and forth between those two violins. The third movement is one of the most beautiful things Mahler ever written. Slow movement, it's almost like a big hug or prayer from the world. Unbelievable music, really heavenly music, and that's the bridge between death and the song that we hear about life in heaven. And one of the climaxes in that movement is at the very end. And enormous orchestra, everybody's playing so loud, and you really hear the gates of heaven opening. I'm not joking.
Wow.
It's incredible moment, which is a perfect bridge to the last movement of that heavenly life sung by the boy walking in heaven.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a journey. It's a real journey through life. Amazing. One of my favorite Mahler symphonies, one of my favorite works to conduct.
Well, you're going to be featuring three soloists in this performance. Can you tell us who they are and what will they be doing?
Yeah, so for the Mozart, there's two soloists, violin and viola. And both of them are principals in our orchestra. Mm. Michelle Lacus is our concertmaster, and Rebecca Swan Taylor is our principal violist. So they'll be playing the Mozart with us. And it's a cool connection because Rebecca and I went to Juilliard over 20 years ago, and now we get to perform as colleagues. So this is really wonderful opportunity for all of us. And in the second half, in the Mahler, like I said, the last movement features the sopranos. We have Laura Strickling, who's a wonderful soprano. She was nominated twice for a Grammy. She's fantastic, and we're looking forward to working with her for the first time.
Fantastic. Well, and we want to invite everyone to be part of Soundbites, so can you remind everyone about that?
Yep. The Friday, is it the 16th? 17th. Friday at 12 p.m. at Monotisi. You get to have a lovely lunch, and Laura and I will be discussing the upcoming program, and of course the Mahler Symphony and the text and everything, so you get to hear about the program and get to know one of the soloists.
Terrific. Well, thank you. Please put Mozart meets Mahler on your entertainment schedule. It's another fantastic presentation by the Rockford Symphony Orchestra on Saturday, January 18th at 7:30 p.m. at the Coronado Performing Arts Center. For more information about the concert, tickets, or more, go to rockfordsymphony.com or call 815-965-0049. This is Phil Davidson.
I'm Yaniv Attar.
And thank you for listening.